You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Hi, I'm Tina Spindler, University of California Master Gardener, and you're listening to In the Garden with Master Gardeners. I'm here with Katrina Kirkaby, my fellow Master Gardener. Hi, Katrina.
Good morning, Tina.
Happy New Year!
I know, amazing, isn't it?
2020. I like that number, 2020. That just has so much balance to it, don't you think?
Maybe it's good news for a good year, right?
I hope so. I think it'll be an awesome year. We got a little bit of early rain, so from a gardening standpoint, our November rains made us super happy and our plants super happy.
And our December rains.
And our December rains, yep. And we're hoping for some January rains.
I love it because it flushes out. I don't know about you, when we have a nice rain year, all my fruit trees, everything is so happy in the spring.
Much happier because we flush those salts, accumulated salts out of the soil, and they just want to have that natural rainwater.
Do you find your fruit trees produce more when we have a good rain year?
Gosh, you know, maybe. It's always hard to determine because the deciduous fruit trees need that winter chill. And so I've never really kept track as to whether or not we got winter chill and that's why they're more productive, or whether it's because we got good rain. You know, it's a combination of factors. But, man, that rain can't hurt, can it?
Oh, no. It's great on the water bill, too, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. I did not have my water on from that first rain in November until I think I turned it on once in December. You know, we had nice recurring rains from, what was that, middle of November mm-hmm. to the middle of December, and so didn't have to turn those sprinklers on.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it was awesome. But here we are in January, and January always brings a super busy month in the garden.
Isn't it amazing? January in Southern California is one of the busiest months in the garden.
It really is, and I think for folks especially who are transplants who have come from other parts of the country, they probably assume that we do absolutely nothing in January. Because if you come from the East, you don't do anything in January.
And not a lot of gardening in Minnesota
right
now.
But here, it's actually our growing season for our natives and California-friendly plants, because they are so excited to get those winter rains that's when they actually grow the most. So that's fun to see, and also means it's a great time of year to plant natives and California-friendly plants.
Yes, tell us a little bit more about that, Tina.
Well, if you have areas of your garden that you want to switch from perhaps traditional landscaping, meaning lawn and heavier water-using shrubs and flowers, you can use this time of year. Basically starts in end of October, November, through April is what I prefer to stop planting California natives or drought-tolerant plants by April. So January is actually a fabulous time to plant them. And if you decide to do that, make sure you're doing an entire section of your yard. Basically, the way I determine it is by the irrigation zones, because you want to make sure that your irrigation is appropriate for those plants. You can't mix plants that want just a little water with plants like hydrangeas that want lots of water, because you're going to kill something.
I find it, when I tried that, I killed both.
Yeah.
Because I was, let's make this one happy, and oh no, let's make this one happy, and I didn't make either one happy.
That's the problem. So it is a great time to do that, and the water districts have so many great resources. If you go out to your water district website, you can also just Google California natives or California-friendly plants, and you'll get lots of links to different websites that will provide pictures and descriptions of those plants. And I think a lot of folks perhaps think that it's basically going to be a succulent garden or cactus, that it's not going to be very pretty. But you actually can have a garden that mimics an English-style garden with lots of blooming plants and softness, and you just do achieve that by choosing plants that bloom with less water and grasses. Of course, I love transforming garden areas using a lot of grasses that are water thrifty, because they have just those wonderful soft
Movements in the wind.
Movements, yeah, that was the word.
And it could be slight movements, but it gives some character to the yard.
Yeah, and there's so many different colors of grasses. You know, some of them actually have, like, pink mullee grass, I think is wonderful because it has those smoky pink blossom type. I mean, they're not blossoms like flowers, but, you know, the grassy.
It gives the feel of it.
Gives the feel of it. So, and then there are the gray tones and, you know, the brighter green. And so there's just a color palette, just even among grasses, that is beautiful. So anyway, if you are considering transforming your yard and getting rid of a lawn and moving to drought-tolerant plants, definitely the time to do it this month.
You know, you mentioned the water districts. I would like to highlight that because the water districts, especially IRWD,
Irvine Ranch Water District.
Ranch Water District has a great website, and it's educational, and it's worth checking out.
They also have workshops, often in conjunction with Master Gardeners. They partner with the University of California Master Gardeners to get speakers from Master Gardeners to talk about various topics. And drought-tolerant gardens are one of the topics that they often share. So you can check both our Master Gardener website and the IRWD website and see when those talks might be scheduled.
Great idea.
Great idea.
It's a wonderful education. You know, you don't even have to do anything. It's just nice to go listen because it's fun.
It is fun. Well, of course, we would sit and talk about gardening and listen to gardening all the time, but hopefully our listeners want to do that as well. But moving on to other things that we need to do in the garden this month, my favorite, of course, one of my favorite plants are roses.
She's smiling again.
Because I am all about flowers, and this is the time of year to really get your roses in tip-top shape or plant new roses.
Or both,
yeah. And I actually usually do a little bit of both. A lot of pruning and a little bit of planting.
Now, Tina has about 80 rose bushes. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about pruning?
Sure.
Why do we prune?
Yeah, why do we prune? Well,
and why do we prune in January?
Sure. Well, we prune in January because this is our winter. Now, our roses don't actually go dormant because it's not really much of a winter. So they will continue to even bloom in January. And so we prune them when it's kind of our coldest month to force them into a bit of dormancy. And we also do that so that we have an opportunity to prevent disease and pests after we prune them. And the reason is we have a lot of fungal diseases that just hang out on our roses. And they hang out on the leaves that our roses drop and the petals that our roses drop. So they get into the soil. And the same with some insects. Some insects will continue to what we call overwinter. They may not be very active in the wintertime, but they're just kind of hanging out on your roses. Scale is one, as an example. So by pruning your roses, you do a couple of things. You force them into dormancy so they take a little bit of a break and rest. And then you get rid of a lot of the disease and insect material because you're cutting off a lot of your rose bushes. And then you also, if you prune correctly, prevent some disease by opening up the rose bushes and allowing better air circulation. And when we have better air circulation, we have less fungal disease and an opportunity for us to spot insects a little bit easier if it's not super dense foliage. So what we want to do, and we have a show on rose pruning and rose care, so you can go to our website and search for the rose pruning or dormant pruning show, or just search for roses and you'll see what comes up. So, but basically, in a nutshell, pruning roses takes a couple of simple steps. So the first thing, because when I first started pruning, I was overwhelmed. Were you overwhelmed?
Oh, beyond overwhelmed. Intimidated.
Yeah. You look at the rose and you think, oh my God, I'm going to kill it. I'm going to
kill
it.
Exactly.
But rest assured that as long as you don't prune it down to 3 inches, you're not going to kill it. So in California, we don't have to do super heavy, dramatic pruning like they do back east. I remember my mom, who was a transplant from Ohio, would always prune our roses in California so that they were only, you know, like a foot tall. And it was very, very severe pruning. Well, they did that back east because then they would mulch that whole 12-inch tall rose bush with straw. And then when it snowed, it would be protected by the insulation of the snow from a hard freeze, which could kill the rose. And so that's why, if you come from the east, that's why you prune pretty severely. Now in California, at least Southern California where we live, not going to happen.
We're not worried about snowdrifts, right? Orange County?
We're not going to get a hard freeze. We may get the occasional frost, but we're not going to get a hard freeze. So we basically want to prune about one-third of our height of our rose bush off. You can prune a half if you've got a lot of disease infestation, but about a third is all that you really need. So if you have a 6-foot tall rose, which isn't unusual in California, you want to prune it down to 4 feet tall. If you've got a 3-foot tall rose, then you want to prune it to about 2 feet tall. So you want to start by pruning by just looking at every stick on that rose bush and just cut it down to the approximate right height, choosing to make your cut where there's an outward facing leaflet, because that's where the new growth is going to come from, and you want that new growth to point out away from the center of the plant, because what we're going to try to do is open up the center of that plant for better air circulation. Then take a look at that once, and the reason I do that first, and this is just my personal preference, is it just gives me an opportunity to take away some of the wildness of that bush so that I can like see it, right? Because when you've got it 6 feet tall,
making those decisions are hard.
It's hard, and it's taller than me, and like, you know, oh my gosh, where do I make my cut? So I first reduce the height of it because I'm only 5'3 anyway, so I need it to be down at a manageable level for my size. And then once I do that, I look at the interior of the plant and I find any branches that are growing from what we call the main cane. So the stems of your rose bush are called canes. And look at those main canes and you'll see that there are canes coming off of them that are growing into the middle of your rose bush. Bad. Don't want those. So cut off every cane that is growing into the center of the rose bush. And that might seem a little severe, but just do it. It's like if you had a wild hair in your eyebrow, right? You would just pluck that thing out because you just don't want it there.
Doesn't do you any good.
So cut those canes out that are growing into the center of the bush. And then cut out any that look dead or diseased. You know, and you can tell, you know, the canes that are greenish looking, those are nice and healthy. The ones that are kind of, you know, brown or broken, just cut those out, whether they're pointing into the interior or to the outside of the bush. Just get rid of them. And then step back, take a look at the bush, and now you want to evaluate which of the main canes you want to keep, because you might have, on a super vigorous bush, you know, 10 of these main canes, and really you want to keep between 5 to 7. So what I do at that point is I cut out the ones that are the oldest and gnarliest looking, because the ones that are green and vigorous looking are the ones that are going to produce the most new growth, the most flowers. And so the object is to leave the plant with 5 to 7 of these main canes. And then I also go to the trouble, which can be kind of a pain and time consuming, to cut off every single leaf on that plant. Then I rake it all up and I bag it and I throw it away. I do not compost it, because remember, we're trying to get rid of those potential diseases. And at that point, you should end up with a bush that has canes that are coming out pointing towards the outside of the bush, and the center of that bush will be open. And so one of the things we master gardeners like to say is, can you set a beach ball in the center of that rose bush? Because that means you've opened up so that you could send a ball in there and it would be held by those canes that are pointing out.
Almost like a vase.
So vase shape or a shape that holds a beach ball are kind of two images that we like to use to explain where you want to end up.
You know, one of the big mistakes I used to make was not cleaning up the leaves.
Yeah.
I did this good job, I learned how to do it, and it's just leaves, you know? It's just leaves. Oh my goodness, what a difference it makes, and so much less problems if you do rake that up, or if you put a tarp down underneath it to let it gather all the stuff underneath.
Sure, that's a good idea.
You know, either way, but it's, I don't know if I was the only one that didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Well, you're really kind of tired by the time you've pruned the bush. You're like, I'm done.
I'm done. You know, it'll compost. But really, it makes a huge difference. So if you're going to do it all the way.
Right. And here's the next step, because we don't want you to stop there, because what I discovered, like Katrina, I would say, I'm done. But then when I became a master gardener, I heard about dormant spraying.
Yes.
And that has changed my life with roses. And so after you rake up and throw away your trimmings, you are going to want to dormant spray your rose bush, because that spraying at that time will coat those remaining canes and the ground, because the spray will fall on the ground, and it will smother the insects and or prevent those spores from the fungal diseases from multiplying. And I have to say, the first time I did it, I had so much less of the fungal diseases like mildew, powdery mildew, and rust, that I was astounded at how much of a difference it made. So I really recommend doing that. And what I have to do for myself so that I don't poop out is, before I start pruning, I mix up the spray. And that way it's already mixed up. And as my last step, I just have to spray it super quick, and then I can go in and have lunch or a cup of tea or a glass of wine, depending on the time of day. But do mix up that spray before you start pruning, and then you'll always
do it.
Do it, yeah.
Do people just go and ask for dormant spray?
Sure. There's a couple of different kinds. If you're not familiar with it, there are basically two forms of dormant spray. One is oil-based, and the way the oil works is it smothers the fungal spores and the insects that are overwintering. Then there are sprays that either have copper or sulfur, you know, different mineral components, and those have an effect on preventing and lessening the fungal diseases. But if you are new to this and not sure what you should get, go to a good nursery. It's great to go to a big box retailer if you know what you're buying. You know, like if I'm looking for a sulfur or a copper spray or horticultural oil, you know, I can run to the big box retailer because I know what I'm looking for. But often their staff, it doesn't have the expertise to share with you about dormant sprays. So in that case, if I didn't know, I would go to a nursery that specializes in plants. You know, we have several chains and several independents that would be happy to help.
And they're wonderful.
Yeah, then they're so fun to talk to and so helpful. So.
Just remember the word dormant spray.
Dormant spray.
Go to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Exactly.
And just say, I have roses. Somebody told me to get dormant spray.
Right.
And they will tell you what to get.
Exactly. Or, you know, we all love to do our own research on the internet. You know, Google dormant spray, and then there'll be lots of articles that will give you information, more than we have time to cover, you know, in this show. But do the main lesson is, mix that dormant spray up. You can also buy ready to spray, where you don't have to mix it. That's a little more expensive, or a lot more expensive, actually. You know, like, what, $10, $12 for a bottle of pre-mixed?
Yeah, but you know, Tina, everybody doesn't have 80 roses like you do.
That's what I was just going to say. I always say mix it up, because I know I have to mix it up, or I would have to take out a second mortgage on my house to buy all the pre-mixed bottles.
But sometimes it's, you know, if you only have one or two or three or four roses, it might just be easier to go buy something pre-mixed and you're ready to go.
Totally great point.
You have to look at your yard, what you have. If you have a plethora of roses, it might be cost efficient to do your own mixing. But if you only have a few roses, it might just be easy. Go grab a bottle and prune your roses and there you go.
You're absolutely right. If you've got half a dozen roses, which is probably what most people have, get it pre-mixed. It will be so much easier to get it pre-mixed. That's what we need to do for our roses this month. Oh, and by the way, don't fertilize your roses yet. You're not going to fertilize your roses until you see new growth coming out, and that's probably going to be end of February, March-ish. So don't fertilize them yet, even though you're out in the yard. We generally don't fertilize plants when they are not actively growing. So since we're making these roses be a little bit dormant, they don't need the food while they're sleeping, just like we don't eat, or we shouldn't eat, in the middle of the night.
And we don't want to wake them up in the middle of the night either.
So don't feed your roses yet. We'll talk about that in February or March. As long as we're talking about pruning and dormant spraying, let's talk about fruit trees.
Oh, how about peaches?
Yeah, peaches, nectarines, plums, apples, pears. Any of the fruit trees that are deciduous, which means they lose their leaves and go dormant during the winter, just like we prune our roses when they're supposed to be dormant. Ours aren't totally dormant, but we also prune our fruit trees when they are dormant. And the method for pruning the fruit trees depends upon the type of tree that it is, so we can't actually give you enough instructions. So what I would say is Google pruning your tree. So if you have a peach, Google pruning fruit trees. If you have an apricot, believe it or not, you prune apricots a little differently than you prune peaches. And the reason is some trees fruit on one-year-old wood and some trees fruit on new year, you know, that current year's wood. So that's why you need to Google.
You can either Google or there's some really good books out there too.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes I like holding on to something mm-hmm. and saying, okay, and take it out in the yard, like, what are we really talking about here? And so I don't have to memorize it from the time I'm in the living room to I'm outside.
Good point. And the University of California has wonderful books, and there is a home orchard book that I love that I bought, you know, a while ago, and I use it every year to refresh my memory about what I should be doing.
Oh, that is so good. I just thought you remembered it all.
Yeah, no, not with fruit trees. With roses, it's easy because it's the same every year. But with fruit trees, I mean, it's the same every year, but I have a pear, and I have a peach, and I have an apricot, and I have an apple, and I'm like, wait, what was the apricot? What was the peach? You know, and I have grapevines, and I have berry vines, right? And so, yeah, no, you got to refresh your memory.
I just thought you memorized the whole thing.
Yeah, I know, I wish. I wish my memory was still that good.
So if Tina could go out and get a book and refresh her memory, the rest of us can too.
Right, but if you want to find that home orchard care book, you can Google University of California, you know, home orchard care or fruit trees, and that'll pop up. Another great website for fruit tree care is our friends...
Dave Wilson?
Dave Wilson Nurseries, and they are growers in Central California, and they grow all of these amazing fruit trees and then ship them to the retail nurseries. But they have this wonderful home orchard section of their website that will tell you anything you need to know about growing fruit trees. And they're actually... they always send one of their experts to teach master gardeners. Yes. When we train new master gardeners, they always send someone to train us about fruit trees, which is so fun.
You know, one of the things that I love on that website is they talk about if you go out and want to buy a fruit tree, it talks about chill hours and what kind of fruit tree. And I took out a side of my property where I used to have eucalyptus, and I wanted a whole bunch of fruit trees. And I was able to go to that website and find out what chill hours... what kind of plant, what do I want, what will grow well here? And I was able to pick out trees that succeeded the first time.
Exactly.
And it's a great website where, you know, I made a list of 20 of them, and it's kind of on a border between myself and my neighbor, and I picked out the ones that I liked and all the ones that was acceptable to me, and I gave them to her and said, well, what would you like, because it's on the border.
Oh, how sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. And those trees are thriving, but I was overwhelmed by how do I pick out, you know, 12, 15 fruit trees, and, you know, what will grow here and what makes sense, because sometimes you want to grow something here and it won't.
Yep.
You know, as much as you want, it's kind of like growing roses in the shade. It won't work.
And the tree might grow, but it won't bear fruit.
Yes.
Because it's not getting enough chill hours.
Yeah.
And the other thing I love about their website is they don't sell to the public, or at least they didn't used to. As far as I know, they don't. But there is a link to find out. You put in your zip code, and they'll tell you where a retail nursery is in your area that sells their product, so that you know that you can go to XYZ nursery, and even if they don't have the particular variety you want, they often can order it for you. So that I thought was a wonderful service also.
And I've done that, and you don't even have to go to the nursery. You can call and say, do you have it?
Oh, duh.
Do you have it?
Save gas.
Save gas. I'm a little lazy on this. Save gas. But it's also, sometimes they don't have it. I go, can you order this for me? And then they'll call you when it's in. And you get exactly what you want.
And since we're talking about that, that's our next topic, and that is planting fruit trees and roses in January, because it is, and other things that are called bare root plants. So anyway, what we need to talk about there is, how do you get bare root plants, and why do you plant bare root plants instead of buying them in a, you know, 5-gallon container? And the reason you buy bare root plants and plant them now in January is because you save money. That's why. when I first started this garden where I live now 15 years ago, I knew I was going to plant a lot of roses. And I knew that I was going to do it in January because I was going to save, you know, at least half, if not more, of the cost of buying a rose in a pot. So that's why you do it. Now, bare root roses are getting a little hard to find because a lot of the nurseries aren't carrying them anymore. They order them in these little peat pots, so they're kind of potted up already. But they're still cheaper even in the peat pots because it's not the size of like a 5-gallon pot, which is what they'll have later on.
The cost of transportation.
Exactly. So they're cheaper because the growers harvest them when they're dormant, and then they're just shipping them back in the day, and there are still some nurseries that get bare root stock, and the roots are just covered in sawdust or wood chips, and a plastic bag is wrapped around it. So you can imagine it's way smaller and way cheaper to ship that way than if you're planting it in a 5-gallon pot with this plant that already has, you know, numerous branches and leaves on it. So do consider ordering roses bare root if you want to have quite a few and save some money. The other reason that I did it is I wanted some specific varieties because I had done, you know, some research on the top roses and the ones with, you know, strong scent or certain colors or repeat bloom or whatever.
Size. Type of bloom.
Exactly. So if you want, you know, the English roses or, you know, a grandiflora, I love grandifloras because they're taller than me and they, you know, the blooms are big and they're just spectacular in the back of your bed or the center of your bed because you have this super tall rose bush, you know, that's 6 feet tall, blooming like crazy. It's just wonderful. So if you have, but on the other hand, if you have a small yard and you want all your rose bushes to be between 3 and 4 feet tall, then you'll can do research and find out which varieties are going to stay that size. And your nursery can only stock so many of these roses. So what I did is I ordered through mail order so that I could get the specific ones that I wanted. So that's another option, is to do some research on the ones you want and mail order bare root, because that's the time of year when you can do it. The other reason I kind of like planting bare root is they're dormant, and so you're not likely to disturb the roots and have them go into transplant shock because they're dormant, and they don't care if you mess about with their roots at that point in time. And so that's another reason to plant them. And we're going to talk about planting them in a minute. But first, I'm going to let you know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, you can go to uci.org.
Or KUCI.org.
That's right. I'm sorry, KUCI.org. Left out a little initial there. So back to planting bare root roses, and this will also apply to planting bare root fruit trees. And the reason to order fruit trees bare root are the exact same as ordering roses bare root, and that is that you can get more varieties when you order them through mail order bare root, and they are cheaper. And the nurseries stock that time of year, January, lots more varieties than they do other times of years, because other times of years they have to be in big pots. So,
and do your homework. Do your homework, because there's something called chill hours. And some of the big box stores don't necessarily pay attention to it as much as some other places. So do your homework, because if you're going to spend time and energy to plant a fruit tree and wait 2, 3, 4 years to get some fruit, you want to make sure it's something that's going to produce. And it's something you want.
Which is why you go to the Dave Wilson website, because they have the low chill fruit trees identified. So that will give you a list of the apples and so on, peaches, et cetera, that will do well in our area.
You know, I loved it. I think I even 1 year got early, mid, and late season peaches.
Why not? Because why not have peaches in May and then again in June and then again in July or August?
We like peaches,
yeah.
Right?
I wish I had done that.
Well, I have to tell you that the early season peaches are just not as sweet.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I don't think it has enough sun to create the sugar.
Interesting.
So I ended up taking out the early season peach tree because there's something else you know, you only got so much room in your yard.
Right.
And it was nice, but it didn't jump out at me and say, oh, you know, when the juice runs down your arm and
yeah.
you just like savor it.
Right.
Where the mid and late season tend to be sweeter. At least that's what happened with us.
Yeah, good to know. So anyway, if you're going to plant a bare root fruit tree or a bare root rose, you want to dig a hole that is about, I would say, 14 to 18 inches wide and probably about a foot to a little more than a foot deep. And you want to excavate that soil. And if you have clay soil, you're going to want to make sure that the sides and the bottom of that planting hole are chopped up. In other words, you know, sometimes when we dig a hole in clay soil, it almost looks like it's a cement-lined hole.
A swimming pool.
Yeah. Also, you do want to make sure that the location you're choosing is going to drain. So after you dig the hole, fill it up with your hose with water and make sure that that hole drains. If it stays full of water for, you know, a couple of days, that's not going to be a good location for your fruit tree, so try and find another location on your property that has better drainage. But anyway, dig that hole, chop up the sides of the hole and the bottom of the hole, make it rough so that the roots of that tree that you're planting or rose bush, you know, have a way to force themselves into those little crevices so that they can extend beyond the hole. And then I like to mix a little bit of compost into that soil that I excavated. But some folks say, you know, it's okay to plant in just straight native soil. But I like to mix a little bit of compost in, and then we also mix a little bit of organic fertilizer for fruit trees, either just an all-purpose fertilizer or one that is noted that it's for fruit trees. And then you make a cone of that soil back in the hole. So you put some of the soil back in, and you shape it into a cone shape. Because what you're going to do with that bare root fruit tree or rose, which, by the way, when you first started digging your hole, you need to unwrap it and set it in a big bucket of water and let those roots just kind of hang out soaking in the water while you're digging your hole. Now they're nice and moist, and you've made that cone of soil in the center, and you're going to spread out the roots over that cone of soil, and there will be a grafted trunk on your rose or your fruit tree. And grafted means that the root stock came from one plant and the stem part of the plant that's going to produce your fruit or your flowers came from another plant. And the reason that growers do that is that they choose root stock that is disease resistant. But often the plants that are disease resistant don't produce good fruit or good flowers. So they graft, which means they actually put the stem of the plant onto the stem of the root stock plant, and they tape them together, and believe it or not, they will grow together to become one plant.
Isn't that amazing?
It's so amazing. It's like taking off my arm and Katrina's arm and putting Katrina's arm on my arm and wrapping tape around it and having it grow together. That's what plants do. Humans, it's a little more complicated. But wouldn't I like to have Katrina's long arms since I'm so short? But anyway, but that's what you're going to see when you unwrap these plants, is you're going to see a little ridge down about 1.5 to 2 inches or so, usually maybe 3 inches, above where the roots start, and you'll see this little ridge, and that's where the graft occurred.
A little ridge or a little bump.
A little bump,
you'll
yeah.
see something that's not quite straight going up and down, yeah. and that's where it is.
That's where it is. And so when we plant the tree, we want, of course, to bury the roots, but we don't want to bury the graft. So make sure that the graft is a couple inches above the soil level.
And Tina, why don't we want to bury the graft? I've done that before.
Yes, because if we bury the graft, what will happen is now you'll have two plants sending out roots. Because the plant that is the top part of the plant, if you put that underground, it's going to say, oh, I need to grow roots. And so now you'll have it growing roots and the roots of the rootstock growing roots. And so now you're going to have a very confused plant. So we like to have that graft
clean,
a little bit above soil.
Makes your life a lot easier.
Right. So then you just backfill the hole with the remaining soil. And we like to have a bit of a watering well that we build with the soil. I like to extend it about 6 inches beyond where the branches are. So if the branches are, say, extending so that you have a two-foot diameter, you know, set of branches, then you would want the watering basin to be another 6 inches out beyond that. And the reason for that is we want to capture the water just temporarily until those roots get established and can extend out into the surrounding soil. So we do that, and then we fill that watering basin up with water a couple of times to make sure that it's completely watered, and then we just wait for the beautiful rose bush or fruit tree to grow.
Spring happening.
Yeah. And then you'll have new growth, depending on the rose or the fruit tree, appearing in February-ish probably. And that's when you'll want to start fertilizing, is when you see that new growth coming out.
So exciting.
That's exciting. That's probably our biggest jobs in January, is to prune, to dormant spray, and to plant bare root.
Could you tell us again the name of that pruning book?
The Home Orchard book by the University of California. I believe it's called Home Orchards or something to that effect.
Something to that effect. It's a great book.
But we do have other things we need to do. We've talked about planting our native or drought-tolerant gardens. We've talked about pruning, dormant spraying, and bare root planting. But there's still a few more things we should talk about.
Why don't we talk about fertilizing citrus?
Yes. So I just told everyone don't fertilize in January. But, of course, with all rules, there's an exception. And the exception is our citrus trees. Our citrus trees usually have a blossom flush. They send out a bunch of blossoms in February. And so we do tend to recommend fertilizing citrus trees for the first time of the year, towards the end of January, and that way they have those nutrients available when they start producing all those flowers in February.
So when you're shopping for your dormant spray, you might as well shop for
citrus food.
Citrus food. Make a list. It's much easier.
So that is the exception to fertilizing. Otherwise, we don't recommend fertilizing much in January. We also, in January, I personally don't plant a lot, but here's some exceptions. If your veggie garden didn't get fully planted with cool season stuff like lettuces and peas and carrots and other root vegetables because you were too busy in November and December, you can still plant those edible plants this time of year. I would probably plant them from six packs, except for the root vegetables, which are always better to plant from seed. And the reason that I would plant them from six packs is in March we switch to warm season veggies, and so if you're limited on space, you're probably going to want to plant from six packs so that you can start harvesting and eating them more quickly.
And depending on what it is, you're worried about it getting warmer. And
your cool season stuff can last until June or so. But if you want the space, which I often do, so that you can start planting tomatoes and zucchini and stuff like that in March, you're going to have these beautiful lettuces that you're going to want to be able to harvest so that you have the space for your other warm season stuff.
And I think we've all come into that issue where we're having wonderful things growing and we want to plant. And it's this hard, hard decision to make. And I try to leave a little bit of space open for the first planting of whatever it might be.
Right.
Because I want to have, it's hard for me to get rid of something when it's producing, but then I know it's time. If I want my tomatoes, I know I need to plant them.
Right. And so what happens with me is if my peas, often the peas end up getting powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll rip those out, but I won't plant new ones because I know I'm going to be planting tomatoes on that trellis where the peas were growing. So I just kind of leave it empty if it's getting close to time for tomatoes.
And believe it or not, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to leave something empty for a while.
Yeah. The other thing, though, that I do plant this time of year in January is the camellias, specifically the Japonica camellias. Those are the ones with the big, giant, puffy flowers that are spectacular. Those are in bloom in January, as are a lot of azaleas. And so I often will plant them because if I need new ones, I can see what the flowers are. And when they're not blooming, you're just relying on the label to tell you what the flowers are. But if you go out and shop during January, you'll get to see those beautiful camellia and azalea blooms and pick the ones you really like.
Now, I don't know if it's okay to say this, but some of the nurseries have some beautiful selections of camellias.
Oh, so some of them are just go over the top, yeah.
Yeah, it's just beautiful, just even to walk around and look at them. Even if you're not going to buy them, it's pretty to look at.
And it's also a great time of year to go to our public gardens. Sadly, we don't have one in Orange County yet, but we're hoping to get one at the Great Park.
That's another show.
We're really excited about that one. But the LA public gardens, Descanso in particular, and Huntington Library and Gardens have great camellia gardens.
Oh, yeah.
And Descanso has camellias that have been there for decades that are just, taller than us and spectacular. So good time if you want to get inspired by camellias to visit some of those public gardens. And then the last thing that I plant in January is seeds. So January...
Isn't that amazing?
I know, it's kind of crazy, but I start them indoors for the warm season plants. So thinking ahead to the tomatoes and other veggies I want to plant in the summer for the warm season, which you actually plant in spring, not summer, as well as the flowers that I want to have in my garden during the warm season. It's when it's raining in January, sit down with a seed catalog and a cup of tea or hot cocoa and decide what seeds you want to order.
What are some of your favorite for flowers?
It's just so fun. For the warm season, I do love tall things, and so I do order cosmos from seed, because often in the nursery you can only get the shorter versions of cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like to plant things by color. I don't like the mixes because I just think it gives a bigger impact in a garden if you have these big swaths of one color. So I do like to order, for instance, the cosmos seeds by color. So I'll order a white one or a pink one rather than the mix where you get the light pinks, the dark pinks, and the whites. I kind of like the single colors. So that's one of my favorites. And if you're a beginner growing things from seeds, cosmos are the very first seed packet I planted when I was 8 years old.
Aww.
Aww. And thanks, Mom. And they're super easy to grow. An eight-year-old can do it. So... So if you're new to seed starting, cosmos are a great one to start from seed.
You might get your 8-year-old hooked on it.
Oh, which is what happened to me. That's how I got into gardening. The other plants that I always plant from seed are the zinnias. And that, again, is because in the nurseries, the zinnias always come the short varieties. You can't, did you know zinnias can be 4 feet tall? They Wow. are amazingly gorgeous. The flower heads on the big ones are, you know, 3 inches across or more. And again, you can order single colors. So, you know, I'll order a magenta, or believe it or not, zinnias come in shades of yellow and oranges and pinks. And there's even a green one called Envy. So I always plant zinnias from seed because I can get the tall ones, which are have these long stems, so you can make these beautiful bouquets. Another one that I like is to grow from seed, although you can now find these in the nursery, so I haven't been growing them from seed as much. But the Rudbeckias or the Black-Eyed Susans, those are easy to grow from seed, and they do come in different heights. So you can get the tall ones, or if you have a small garden and you want something that's shorter, you can get the ones that are, you know, 2 to 2.5 feet tall. And then, of course, sunflowers. You know, if you
love sunflowers,
there are the mammoth sunflowers, you know, that get what, 8-9 feet tall with the big centers that produce seeds for the birds. And then you can get, there's wonderful varieties that are multi-branching sunflowers now that don't give you just the one big sunflower, but that give you multiple branches with lots of smaller, but still big, you know, like six or eight inch across flowers. There's even dwarf ones that they're not super dwarf, but they stay 3 feet tall, you know. So
I tell you, one of the sweetest things my husband does is he knows I love sunflowers, and he will plant them as a surprise all Aww. Over our property. So all of a sudden I see them, and it's incredible what you said. And sometimes he'll put the short ones in front and then layer them and then put the taller ones. So then you just have a wall.
Oh, my gosh. He even plans it. Wow. Oh.
And it's he doesn't go out and plant them this early, but oh my God, it's so nice when you come out there and you see this present, you know.
And
sunflowers always make me smile.
I think they make everyone smile. They're just happy, you know. They're just happy plants.
They seem to be really easy to grow.
I mean,
he sticks them everywhere. It's I'll find them in the vegetable garden. He almost like hides them. You know, so it's like I turn a corner and there's a sunflower. And it's just it's one of those plants that make you smile.
It is. It's great. So peruse your seed catalogs, you know, go online.
Do you have any seed catalogs that you particularly like?
You know, I get them from everywhere because I have subscribed to all of them, much to my husband's dismay. He says, oh my gosh, why do we get, and I tell him, you know, this is the cheapest addiction on the planet is seed catalogs. Doesn't hurt my health.
Makes her happy.
I recycle them. So, you know, I recycle the paper and I do personally like, I do also peruse online. But I do like the seed catalogs cause I can bend the pages, you know, the corner of the pages are the ones I want to, because, you know, I can't order all the seeds I want, right? I've done that in the past. And 30 seed packets is just not feasible to plant.
Even though you have a big yard.
Right. So I bend the pages of the ones I'm interested in, and then I mentally go back and whittle down and order, you know, I kind of cap myself at 10 so that it's not too insane. But other ones that I love is, did you know there are tall marigolds? So yeah. Marigolds that you can cut for bouquets.
Isn't that nice?
Which you can't find in the nurseries. And then, of course, there are the short border ones of all different kinds. And marigolds, another one that your 8-year-old can plant, and they're super easy to grow. So, yeah, just have fun with it, you know.
You know, it's nice in a winter, rainy Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a fun, easy thing to do is peruse those catalogs. Or go online.
Right. And then once your seed packets arrive, the end of January, beginning of February, let's talk about seeds starting. I think we have a show on that, too.
Yes, we do.
But I'll just give you the quick and dirty basics. You want to get clean containers. So if you saved 6 packs from when you bought other stuff, you can use those, but make sure you wash them out. And if you want to be super safe, you can sterilize them in a solution of 1 part bleach to 10 parts water, just after you wash them, dip them in that, and then you'll know that they're sterilized and there won't be any fungal diseases that can hurt your seedlings. And then you want to fill those with either, there's a product called Seed Starting Mix. It's just a super fine potting mix, or you can just get potting mix and fill them with that. There are also seed starting kits, and they come with a plastic tray and the little cell inserts and a little plastic clear dome. Those are great because the dome, after you plant, traps the moisture in with those the soil and the new seeds, and that is the key to getting seeds to germinate, is to not ever let them dry out. So those domes are great because it's like a mini greenhouse, and it keeps the moisture in there. And then in January, we want to start them inside. So you want to put them in a room that has bright light, but not in a window where they get direct sunlight, especially if you have that dome over it, because it could basically cook your poor seeds if the sun was shining directly on that. It would, you know, heat it up and it would get too hot. And then once they germinate, which you just look at the seed packet, it tells you everything you need to know about that particular seed. But let's just talk sunflowers or marigolds or cosmos. Those germinate like nobody's business. So in 3 to 5 days, those things are probably going to be sending little seed heads up. And as soon as you see the little, they're called cotyledon leaves. Those are the leaves that break through the seed casing and through the soil. You want to take that, if you have one of those domes, plastic domes on, you want to take that off, because you, at that point, want air to circulate to prevent any fungal diseases. So the dome only stays on until your little seedlings start to sprout.
Now, one thing I found out about planting inside is that you have to keep them watered.
Yes.
So you have to nurture these. They're little itty-bitty babies, and you don't want them to dry out. So if you're going out of town or you're busy, make sure somebody's taking care of them.
Exactly. And one of the things that somebody needs to do is to rotate your planting container, because your window is only going to be on one side, unless you have grow lights. But, you know, most of us don't set up the grow light system. So if you're just using natural light from a window for those seedlings, they're going to lean towards that source of light. So every day you want to rotate your little seed container so that it doesn't keep leaning towards the light.
And it's easy to tell.
Yeah. You'll see them do it right away.
So what we learn that in school when we're real little, it'll grow to the right. And what you want to do is balance it out.
And as far as watering goes, Katrina's right. You need to be on top of it. And there's a couple of ways to water these new seedlings. You can do what's called bottom watering, and that's if you have one of these trays with the cell inserts. You can put the water in the tray deep enough that it touches the bottom of the cell packs, and then it will absorb through the bottom of the cell pack. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it when your seeds haven't sprouted yet is you can use a spray bottle to, you know, spray the top of that to keep that surface moist. And then you can also have a watering can that has a very fine, what's called a rose, the metal thing that's, or plastic thing that's on the end of a watering can. You want one that has, you know, lots and lots and lots of tiny perforations so that when you water, it comes out in a very gentle stream.
And you also want to have something underneath it.
Absolutely. You don't want to mar your furniture. In fact, I recommend never putting it on anything wooden. But even your countertops, it's a good idea to put some sort of, you know, like a trivet or something under, so that container is up off of the surface so that it doesn't, you know, mar the surface with any moisture. So that's, I think, some good tips for what you plant this time of year. Of course, you can always, if you're having a party or something and you want to fill in and spruce up, you can always plant, you know, a little bit of color, whatever you can find at the nursery, in pots, and just so that you have some, you know, beautiful stuff going on.
Company's coming over.
Yeah, exactly. But some of us are tired from entertaining, so we don't do a lot of entertaining in January. The other thing I'll mention quickly is lawns. Our lawns also love this time of year when we're getting these great rains. And we do need to remember what kind of lawn we have, whether it's a cool season lawn or a warm season lawn. If it's a warm season lawn like St. Augustine, it may be looking pretty brown. The warm season lawns actually go dormant in the winter. So don't be tempted to fertilize them when they're looking brown. They're supposed to look that way.
And if you're not helping them out,
they're not ready for fertilizer until the spring when the weather warms up. And if you're not sure, you can just dig out a little corner of your lawn, take it to a good nursery, and they'll be able to identify what type of grass you have. If you have a cool season lawn, which a lot of us have tall fescue cool season lawns, those you actually do fertilize in the winter time. So you can lightly fertilize those from November until June. Read the package directions, and they are used to cooler weather, so they will continue to actively grow during the cooler weather. So you can use a little fertilizer on those if you want to keep them looking green.
Here's a question for you, Tina. Would now be a good time to, if we wanted to spruce up our lawn, to throw out some more seed?
Yes, absolutely. And in January, you can. I might actually wait until February, because here's what is the more important job to do for your lawn in January, and that is put out a pre-emergent for crabgrass. I don't know about you, but I get tons of crabgrass. I've got it pretty better under control because I've been pretty diligent. If you have crabgrass in your lawn, and the way you know it's crabgrass, did you get this lawn that looked like grass, but it came up and it kind of spread out and looked mat-like?
Yes.
Over your lawn, and then when the weather cooled off in, say, November, it kind of maybe looked a little reddish or brownish. And then if you tried to pull it out, it left kind of a hole because it had smothered your other grass. That's crabgrass. And you don't want that, because eventually it can eliminate all of the real grass that you want to keep. So there are pre-emergence, which means that it kills the seeds before they have a chance to germinate. Crabgrass is a warm season plant. And so when the weather starts warming up, it'll start germinating all over your lawn. So one of the things that you can apply is there's an organic pre-emergent. It's basically a corn gluten product, and it has nitrogen in it as well, so it acts as a fertilizer for your lawn. So this is the month to put that out, to stop those seeds from germinating. And then I would, in February, sow seeds of the grass that you want. So for instance, if you have a tall fescue, I, in February, try to remember to go out to those, you know, blank places that either the gophers messed up or the crabgrass messed up.
Or your dog.
And I will scratch the soil and toss out the new grass seed and then cover it with a little bit of compost.
So we have a little bit of shopping list this month. We have dormant spray, we have pre-emergent, we have citrus food, we could get some seed to plant for next month.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was a great summary.
Buy some seeds if you want to plant from seeds.
Yeah. There's so much to do in January. And personally, I think it's so fun because the start of a new year always makes me want to do kind of, you know, new stuff, right? Clean out a closet, plant a new rose, prune a rose. So I just think it's a really fun, hopeful month in the garden.
How exciting. Well, with that, we're at the end of our show.
Great. Well, happy gardening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We wish everybody a wonderful and healthy, happy year and happy gardening. And wow, you got your shopping list, and go have fun. In between the rain, hopefully we will have.
Yes, keep your fingers crossed for rain.
Alrighty, until next month, it's Tina and Katrina.